Okay, then we can start now. So basically, this is a Sutta teaching session. So we will start by paying homage to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Basically, we are taking a particular sutta and going through it part by part so that we are getting some understanding about Buddha's teaching. So one idea or one objective of this session is to get some connection with our practice and the Buddha's teaching, because it is quite important to refer Buddha's teaching, because it is not necessary for us to reinvent the wheel. Rather, Buddha has given us or shown us the path, and we time to time refer that, and then we can match it with our practice, or we can tally it with our practice, so that we get some confidence, we get some understanding, some clarity of our path. So therefore, I am trying to select certain suttas which is more important and more relevant to our practice. So accordingly, we have selected one particular sutta that is available in Majjhima Nikaya. So this sutta is called Sabbasava Sutta. You all can look at it in your screen. I am sharing my screen with you all, so you can refer that. So the idea is, here Buddha is coming up with various strategies to overcome various levels of hidden defilements. As I said during last time, there are three main levels of defilements according to the Buddha's teaching. The most evident level is where we do some sort of a transgression. We are breaking a precept. Say, for example, we kill an animal, we kill a mosquito. Likewise, we breach the precept. So at that point, we are breaking or breaching the precept. Panadipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiya. So we couldn't recognize the sort of the intention we had in the mind, but rather immediately we reacted. So we couldn't stop it. We didn't have any breaks. So therefore, we actually has transgressed the precept. So this is the easy level that one can understand, that we sometimes call as vitikkama kilesa, where it is a transgressive level of defilements. Then before reaching there, the intention and the defilement, all these things come to the surface of the mind, in other terms to the consciousness, so that we can even recognize there. But that requires some amount of practice, and that appearing in the mind is we call pariyutthana kilesa, where we can understand that now they are present in the mind. So in English, we can translate it as the obsessive level. So those kilesa are present now in the mind. So if we fertilize it, if we encourage it, it will grow and it will ultimately even overwhelm us. So that is a possibility. Now in this Sabbasava Sutta, actually the main focus is not driven to these two levels, but rather to a more hidden or more latent type of defilements that we call as Asava. So that may be the sort of a hidden layer. And that is actually sometimes difficult to understand, because when the mind is free, or when the mind is free from defilements, we think that we are all right. But the very instance that we come across any sort of object, so accordingly we might react to it. So how this reaction happen? So how our mind is conditioned to react in a particular manner? So what are these thinking patterns? So say, for example, if there are several people available, and there are several kinds of flowers are available, and some may select one type of a flower and another may select another type of a flower, another kind of a flower. So how or who decides this selection, who decides this choice? So that is where we have to deal with these hidden tendencies or latent tendencies, underlying tendencies. So that is what this sutta is trying to address. So according to the teaching, there are three main such influxes or taints are referred in this sutta. The first one is called sensual desire, kamasava. Second one, the desire for being, bhavasava. Then the avijjasava, that is the ignorance. And in certain other suttas, there are four influxes are indicated, including the dittasava, that is the influx of views. So this influx of views actually can be considered within the ignorance. So therefore, mainly we can say we are under the operation of three influxes, or in detail we can say we are under the influence of four influxes: kamasava, bhavasava, avijjasava, and dittasava. So kamasava, bhavasava, dittasava, avijjasava. So, and last time we went through more detail. Today I will summarize these areas. So one important point that Buddha explains us or highlighting us is that we should understand and recognize these influxes, otherwise it is impossible for us to be free from them. So he categorically mentions janato aham bhikkhave pastato asavanam khayam vadami no ajanato no apassato, because I say that the destruction of the taints is for the one who knows and sees, not for the one who does not see and does not know. So therefore, having some understanding about these defilements, these levels of hidden tendencies, is quite important for us to progress in our path. If we don't know this, so then we are simply operating according to these influxes unknowingly. So we are like pre-programmed robots, pre-programmed puppets, where we don't know how we are operating. What are the programs? What are the conditions operating under the very deep levels of our consciousness, or in other terms, in our subconsciousness? And without knowing that, we are simply operating. And we think that I am the decision maker, that is my choice, and I have taken a decision. So I like this, I like that, I don't like this, I don't like that. So likewise, we introduce the term I, personality view, to this whole experiences. And we are simply operating. But underneath, there are these hidden tendencies, hidden layers, conditioning operating. Now, recognizing this is therefore quite important. Now, in order to recognize these defilements, we have to have yoniso manasikara. So this yoniso manasikara, or wise attention, actually going through this whole strategies like a lifeline. All these strategies are very much combined or coupled with yoniso manasikara. Yoniso manasikara here actually means that we have to go to the root, to the source, just without simply taking the surface value. We have to see the causes. We have to go to the source. So therefore, yoniso manasikara is one important aspect Buddha highlights in this sutta. And if one has yoniso manasikara, then unarisen taints do not arise. So Buddha mentions that unarisen taints do not arise if one has yoniso manasikara. On the other hand, if there are arisen taints, arisen defilements, arisen asavas, then they start to fade away because of our vice attention, and ultimately we can abandon them. But on the other hand, if one doesn't aware of this yoniso manasikara, then unwise attention is available. He is simply living in the surface, taking the surface value, not realizing the deeper meanings, and therefore he is simply using unwise attention. So that actually helps to grow asavas, grow defilements, and therefore they are increasing, and even the unarisen pains are going to arise. So there are seven strategies Buddha have mentioned in this sutta. So the first one is called Attibhikkave Asava Dasana Pahatamba. Dasana Pahatamba. By seeing, one can abandon certain levels of pains. Then there are the second one, Attibhikkave Asava Sangvara Pahatamba. By restraining. By restraining, one can overcome another level of defilements. Then Attibhikkave Asava Patisevana Pahatamba. When we are using certain commodities, maybe certain various consumables, we have to use them wisely, and by doing that proper reflections, one can overcome the defilements. So that comes as the number third. Then Atti Asava Adhivasana Pahatamba. There one has to be patient, enduring, and that way one can overcome influxes. So that is the number fourth. Then Atyasava Parivajjana Pahatamba, where one avoids certain bad people, dangerous places. So that is what mentioned in number five. Then Atyasava Vinodana Pahatamba, when there are defilements present in the mind, rather than encouraging them, one has to practice mindfulness or various other useful techniques to abandon them, remove them. So that comes as the Vinodana Pahatamba. The last one is Bhavana Pahatamba. By further cultivating one's positive aspects in the mind and the enlightened factors, one can overcome defilements, and that comes as the number seven. So we actually have dealt with number one. That also we couldn't complete last time. So in number one, Buddha is explaining about how one can overcome defilements or overcome particularly these latent tendencies by seeing. So there we covered mainly the untaught ordinary person, how an untaught ordinary person who is simply a blind person, we can say, who is not aware of the Dhamma, who has never come across Dhamma, who haven't heard about Buddha's teaching, haven't associated any Kalyana Mithas, good people. So therefore, for such person, he don't know what to reflect. He don't know what are the things which are beneficial to pay attention. And on the other hand, he don't know what is unbeneficial or detrimental to his mind. Some harmful thoughts he is not aware of. So not knowing these two sides, now what happens is he is not attending to those things fit for attention. So basically what mentioned here is that since he don't know the good things, he don't know how to reflect about them. He's not thinking about them. He's not reflecting about them. He's not wisely paying attention to them. On the other hand, he is attending to those things which is unfit for attention. So that is where his way of thinking is in a way kind of a wrong. So because of this wrong thinking, now unarisen pains arise and arisen pain increases. So this is the consequences where unwise attention is causing. So this is very important to understand. So this whole sutta, in a way, in this section particularly, mentions about how one has to think, how one has to reflect, how one has to pay one's attention. So if one doesn't know what is useful to think, he is not thinking about that. On the other hand, if he don't know what is harmful to think, what is detrimental for his mindset, then he is not knowing that, he is thinking about such things. As a result, more and more influxes are growing, more and more defilements are growing, so he is actually now bound to the samsara. He couldn't find a way out, he is more and more sort of hinged to the samsara, trapped in the samsara. So therefore, in this sutta, Buddha mentions about 16 types of wrong thinking. So I am not going to go in detail about these things because last time we went through them. We are related to the past, one can think in a wrong way. So you can see that everywhere this I is included. So he thinks there is a I. So was I in the past? Was I not in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what? What did I become in the past? So you can see in this whole section, one is reflecting about the past, attributing a self. He assumes that there is a self, there is an I, and attributing that personality view, he is now thinking. So as a result, he is getting more and more confused. So he can do the same thing related to the future as well. Will I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? Having been what shall I become in the future? So likewise, you can see when we are thinking about the past and the future, if we are attributing it to a self, to a strong personality view, then we get more and more entangled. On the other hand, if we consider the present, there are also, if one attributing a self to the thinking system or thinking pattern, then there also we get trapped. Am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? Where has this being come from? Where will it go? So all this actually indicates a personality view. So therefore, Buddha says the ultimate result, he get trapped in certain views. We can say certain michaditti. Wrong views are now prevalent in his mind. Self exists for me. So he now thinks there is a self. No self exists for me. So there is no self. I perceive self with the self. So he assumes that there is a self. With that self, I am now perceiving the self. I perceive not self with the self. There is a self available. Now I am trying to recognize not self with that available self. I perceive self with not self. There is not self. And with that, now I am trying to recognize a self. So likewise, there are these various entanglements, various wrong views could arise because of this wrong way of thinking, unwise attention. So therefore, Buddha mentions the gravity of this way of thinking, telling that this is a thicket of views. This is a wilderness of views. This is a priest of views. This is an indecision of views. And this is a fetter of views. It is quite difficult when one reaches to the michaditti, then even sometimes Buddha can't release him. There are many people during the Buddha's time who have taken some strong, wrong views. So Buddha even didn't try to help them because it's very difficult when they are coming to wrong views. But of course, Buddha has tried his best to release many such people. But there are instances he simply has given up. Just to give you an example, there are Jatila, various ascetics that Buddha approached, and actually Buddha couldn't convince them easily. There are thousands of various psychic powers he has to use even to convince them, because they were thinking that they have attained, they are the Arahants. Buddha is not the Arahant, he is not the Samma Sambuddha, but they are the Arahants. Likewise, they have had a very strong wrong views. So even the Buddha couldn't address them. Buddha couldn't overcome them simply by preaching. So ultimately, so Buddha has used various methods to convince them how unwise they are, how entangled they are, how foolish they are. And thousands and thousands of miracles he has to show in order to convince them. But there are several other instances Buddha has to strategically address different people so that they will get convinced. So therefore, likewise we can understand, so when one get on to wrong way of thinking, it's very difficult to stop that, and he get overwhelmed by that kind of thinking. He get obsessed by such thinking, and ultimately he get conditioned. His mind is somewhat fixed now. He's now carrying sort of a fixed views, so it is very difficult to change. Actually, this is more evident among the adults, not within the children. So children, on the other hand, are very flexible. Their minds are fairly pure, and therefore we can cultivate certain good way of thinking to the children's mind. But on the other hand, when we consider the adults, so if they are used to wrong way of thinking again and again for many years, when they reach 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, so they are having strong fixed views, so it would be quite difficult to change such views. Now we can discuss about the good side. Suttava Aryasavaka, one who is well taught. Now he actually has met some good people, some noble people. He has heard the Buddha's teaching, and he is skilled in the discipline and the Buddha's Dhamma, Buddha's teaching. And he is constantly, say for example, practicing, reflecting about the Buddha's teaching, say he is maintaining some restraint, morality, and likewise he is in the good side. There. So since he has met Kalyana Mitras, so he understands what things are fit for attention. So this is in a way kind of a knowledge one has to gather by association or by referencing. Nowadays actually there are many ways of gathering information, unlike Buddha's time. During the Buddha's time, they have to simply meet the Buddha or one of his disciples in order to know the teaching. But nowadays, either by simply meeting a monk or just by going through the internet, by referring books, listening to Dhamma. So there are many different ways available for us to understand the Buddha's teaching. So in a way, it is good. And therefore, one can have a good idea about what is suitable to think, suitable to pay attention. Manasikaraniye Dhamme Pajanati. And on the other hand, he can understand what is not good for paying attention, unfit for attention, something harmful to his mind, his practice. So, amanasikaraniye dhamme pajana. He knows what is not good. He knows what is detrimental to think. So, as a result, he does not attend to those things unfit for attention. So, therefore, since he knows what is good and what is bad, so he is now avoiding the bad way of thinking, wrong way of thinking. On the other hand, he is attending to those things fit for attention. He knows what is beneficial. He knows what is useful, what is correct. And as a result, he is paying more and more attention to those correct way of thinking. Now, what is the result? The result is unarisen taint does not arise. And arisen taint abandoned. Now you can see this way the complete sort of a change of thinking, way of thinking, helps us to address these influxes. So this is the important point where Buddha reflects in this, or Buddha mentions in this sutta. So if one knows what is necessary to think, if one knows what is useful to think, to pay attention, and on the other hand, if one knows what is harmful to pay attention, what is detrimental for what is one's practice, and what are the ones which could lead to confusion, entanglement. If one has some idea about those, then he can accordingly use the wise attention. So now Buddha mentions in this sutta what is useful for paying attention. There are many things according to the teaching that is more useful to pay attention, wise reflection. But in this sutta, Buddha has mentioned about four noble truths. If you want to think about something, just think about four noble truths. So he actually has summarized the whole teaching to four noble truths here, telling that that is the kind of the essence that if one has to think, so just think about the four noble truths. So it is not some sort of surface level or superficial understanding of four noble truths. So one, even if you ask from a child who is attending to a Sunday school or Dhamma school, what are four noble truths? He simply will say, dukkha arya satcha, dukkha samudaya arya satcha, dukkha nirodha arya satcha, dukkha nirodha gamini patipada arya satcha. The truth of suffering, the cause of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and the path leading to the cessation of suffering. So this is known by everybody almost. But just knowing this has very limited help. I mean, in this sutta, we are not emphasizing just kind of a theoretical understanding about Buddha's teaching, but is practically using them. That is the most important part, because simply knowing the teaching has less benefits. But if you can apply the teaching practically in your life, that is the most important part. So therefore, the Four Noble Truths, so you can refer this diagram. So Four Noble Truths can be summarized according to this teaching. So it has, every time there's a kind of a theory part. To each truth, there's a statement, there's a theory. And then there's a kind of a practice. And then the result. So Pariyatti is the statement or the theory related to a particular truth. And Patipatti is the way of practice, how you have to deal with that truth. And if you dealt with that in that particular way, according to that practice, so what is the result? What is the realization? So that comes as the third. So each truth has this kind of a pattern. So it has the theory, it has the practice, and it has the outcome. It has the result. It is common to first noble truth, common to second noble truth, common to third noble truth, and the fourth noble truth. Now, according to the first noble truth, so what is the statement? What is the theory? So Buddha says, there is dukkha. Idam dukkham ariya satcham. There is suffering, there is dukkha, there is unsatisfactoriness. Now, even here we can talk a lot, because this is not telling that I am suffering. This is my dukkha. Why this happened to me? Why poor me? So that way is not here. What is mentioned here is there is dukkha. So we need to very clearly understand this difference. So first noble truth does not say I am suffering. Why am I suffering? Oh, Why poor me? It always comes to me, not to others. I am suffering. So that kind of wrong understanding is not there. What mentions there is suffering. There is unsatisfactoriness. There is dukkha. So this is a complete change of perspective. So we need to clearly understand the first noble truth help us to see the suffering, see the unsatisfactoriness in an objective manner. So you need to, so Buddha, the theory is there is dukkha. And the practice, patipatti, is that the dukkha should be understood. So one needs to recognize suffering. One needs to recognize unsatisfactoriness. One should need to properly understand, clearly understand unsatisfactoriness. So this can be a kind of a mild irritation, or this can be a, some sort of a resistance in the mind, or even this can be a very heavy pain. Say for example, if you simply seeing someone whom you don't like, a little resistance arises in mind. That also comes under dukkha. Say while you are walking, there's a, you hit your leg on a stone. So there's a little pain arise. This also dukkha. Suppose some loved one passed away, say through an accident or whatever it is. So this also causes some suffering. This also dukkha. And suppose you go through a surgery and you are coming up with various, say, side effects and all various pains, bodily pains. This is also dukkha. And on the other hand, suppose you have to go through a penalty or kind of a demotion or something like that. So as a result, you get some mental pain. That also dukkha. And things are not happening according to your wish, and you want to want the way in a particular way, but things are happening in an opposite way. So as a result, you get frustrated. This is also dukkha. So therefore, the term dukkha has a wide range. So simple term suffering, many say that it does not fully cover the term dukkha. So therefore, we can consider dukkha in a very wide range, starting with mild resistance available in the mind to a very high level of suffering. So every type, so therefore we need to recognize, we need to understand. Rather than trying to immediately get rid of dukkha, so the point here is to try to understand the dukkha. There is dukkha. So this statement, there is dukkha, actually helps us to disengage a person who is going through the dukkha with this real dukkha. So typically we personify this whole experience. When, say for example, when you feel some resistance in the mind, some aversion in the mind, some kind of irritation in the mind, you immediately think, oh, I am suffering. Why this happens to me? So we immediately attribute a person to it. But rather in this sutta, in this truth, what is important is to disengage from this suffering. So you have to look at the suffering. Now, one whole important aspect of mindfulness is to recognize the object or the experience as experience. Say for example, if you are doing some walking meditation, when your left leg is touching the ground, probably you can feel some hardness. So can you recognize this as hardness? When you are going through some anapanasati meditation, for example, you may be breathing in. Maybe a sort of a cool air coming through. Now you are feeling some cool type of experience. When you are breathing out, there is a kind of a warm kind of a air flowing out. So could you recognize that? So this experience, this bodily experience and the knowing part have to be distinguished, have to be separated. then we have a better understanding about what is going on. If we are simply not having even that kind of an understanding, it is difficult to practice Four Noble Truths. So we therefore have to have some understanding about what we are talking here in practical sense. So when the body pain is available, are we able to see the pain as pain? That is in a way Vedananupassana. Because we are able to disengage from the pain and look at pain objectively. On the other hand, if your mind has some sort of a defilement, say your mind is now going through some angry thoughts and it is producing some amount of suffering, are you able to recognize that suffering? Are you able to recognize that kind of a burning available inside? Your heart is burning because of the angry thoughts going on in the mind. So are you able to recognize this bodily pain, this aversion, this anger as anger? This is suffering. So there is suffering. So there is dukkha. There is suffering. We need to objectively look at it. And dukkha should be understood. And it has to be understood. So it is not that we are trying to get rid of it. Rather, we have to recognize it and has to understand that. And we have to, more and more we understand that, then we can recognize the cause of it. And when we fully understood it, so then one can see the Pativeda that he is now have understood the suffering. Now, this doesn't mean that we understood the whole plethora of suffering or whole variety of suffering available throughout the world. Rather, at this moment, suppose there's a mild irritation in your mind, if you could recognize that, so that is enough for the time being. So that's why it is more important to apply these teachings practically. So it is not that we theoretically understand various types of suffering and we sort of memorize all these different categories and just to pass the exam. It is not the target of this session. What is the most important aspect of this Sutta teaching session is to combine our practice with the Buddha's teaching. Get some understanding, get some help, some guidance from the Buddha's teaching to our practice. So next time, whenever you go through some amount of irritation, some amount of suffering, some amount of unsatisfactoriness, are you able to recognize that? Are you able to understand that? Will you be able to disconnect from that? Rather than thinking that I am suffering, this is my suffering, why poor me going to suffer? So rather than thinking like that, thinking like such wrong way, are you able to sort of disconnect knowing part and the, say, if it is a bodily pain, are we able to disconnect this bodily pain and then the knowing? So Vedananupassi, Vedanasu, Vedananupassi. So there is a painful feeling available in the body, say for example, and one can know that. That's a pain arising. There's a pain changing. Now the pain has disappeared. So likewise, one can see all these different levels and different types of suffering, and then only one would be able to have some idea about the First Noble Truth. Now, the Second Noble Truth says there is a cause of dukkha. So, as I said when I am explaining the First Noble Truth, so if you properly understand the First Noble Truth, there's a possibility for you to understand the cause of it. Because you are not now limiting yourself at the surface, but you are now penetrating the whole suffering, whole unsatisfactoriness, and finding its roots, finding its cause. So as a result, you would be able to recognize the cause. Idam dukkha samudayam arya satyam. This cause is basically the desire and various types of tanha, craving, And Buddha says three major types are there: kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. The sensual desire, kama tanha, bhava tanha, the desire to become, and vibhava tanha, the desire to get rid of. So these levels or these types of craving is available. And Buddha says they are the main culprits. They are the main roots, main causes for suffering to arise. And there are certain other suttas telling the cause of suffering is the causal relationship happens in the inner way in the Paticchasamuppada. So if we don't know, if we have sort of inherent ignorance within our minds, so then we are thinking in a wrong manner, so it actually causes a lot of suffering. So therefore, that also another aspect of cause of suffering. So there again, Buddha mentioned that the samudaya side, the arising side of the dukkha, can be explained according to Paticchasamuppada as well. So I am not going to cover that here. But basically, I am trying to give some rough idea about Four Noble Truths here. So the second noble truth is therefore there is cause of dukkha. There we need to understand the cause to recognize that desire. And it has to be let go. So now this is the patipada. This is the action we need to take once we recognize the cause. Rather than promoting that desire, rather than enhancing or motivating that desire, we have to let go of that desire. So that is the whole practice, kind of a letting go process. Once we know there is suffering, assume that we were able to recognize that, we understood that. Once we are going to find the causes of that suffering, suppose we understood, so it has arisen due to some desire in the mind. So once we recognize such desire, then that desire has to be let go of. Rather than holding it, rather than grasping it, rather than attaching to that desire, we have to let go of that desire. And once we did that, then we understand, okay, now the desire is not available. It has gone. It has pahinang. The desire has been let go of. So you can see, even now you could understand, oh, this is a kind of a practice. This is not simply a theory. This whole Four Noble Truths is a kind of a practice. You have to practically apply this to your life. And the third noble truth is there is the cessation of dukkha. Once the dukkha is not available, once the suffering is not available, there is a cessation. And that cessation should be realized. So this is something to be realized. Actually, here we are talking about the Nirodha Saccha, the cessation. So there is a possibility of not having suffering, not having any kind of unsatisfactoriness, not having any agitation, kind of a very calm, peaceful, satisfied nature of the mind. So that state has to be recognized. That has to be realized. And once you recognize that, once you realize that, then one come across the pativeda of the third noble truth, the cessation of the dukkha has been realized. Satchikatam. So, and this whole practice actually comes as the fourth noble truth, that is the patipada, where dukkha nirodhagamini patipada. When one is applying this kind of a practical approach to your life, then one can say you are practicing fourth noble truth. So fourth noble truth is further explained in Noble Eightfold Path. Samma Ditti, Samma Sankappa, Samma Vacha, Samma Kammanta, Samma Ajiva, Samma Vayama, Samma Sati, Samma Samadhi. So Noble Eightfold Path is introduced there to further explain what is the patipada, what is the practice. And it has to be developed. So this is the most important part. So this fourth noble truth has to be developed. In the other sense, we can say this whole practicing this whole Four Noble Truths is actually the practicing of this fourth truth. Now, if you are trying to, whenever suffering is available, if you are trying to recognize this suffering, if you are trying to understand it, if you are trying to find the cause, and you understood the cause, and the cause has been let go of, as a result, your mind is now free from suffering. As a result, now you are able to realize that peaceful state of the mind. So that is the practical application of this fourth noble truth. So that kind of a practice has to be cultivated. That kind of a practice has to be developed. Not just a day, not a single day, not just within a single session, say during a retreat, but rather it's a kind of a lifetime practice. It's not that something you understand these four truths and three aspects of each truth and come across all these 12 aspects of the Four Noble Truths, and then you go to a kind of a more deeper complex teaching. Rather, this whole Four Noble Truths has to be practically applied to each and every experience of our life. Whenever you go through some kind of a suffering, some kind of an unsatisfactoriness, some kind of a despair, some kind of unhappiness within your mind, if you are able to apply these Four Noble Truths, as I have explained here, maybe in a summary, if you are able to practically apply them, then we can say you are developing the path. So when it is fully developed, one can say he has attained arahantship. So he has bhavitang. He has fully developed the Noble Eightfold Path. Now in this sutta, in Dasana Pahatamba, Buddha says if one has practiced like that, if one has paid proper attention like that, then there's the possibility of overcoming three fetters, namely personality view, sakkaya ditti, vichikicca, doubt, silabbata paramasa, adherence to rules and observances. So basically, this is the stream winning state, one becomes a sotapanna. So you can see in this sutta, Buddha briefly taking us to the, or guiding us towards the, so the stream entry. Yeah, he is explaining what is not correct, what is correct, and knowing what is correct, we have to reflect in that manner. Knowing what is incorrect, we have to abandon that way of thinking. And particularly, Buddha emphasized about the Four Noble Truths here. If you want to practice, if you want to reflect, if you want to pay attention, Buddha invites us to see the Dhamma according to the Four Noble Truths. So, Four Noble Truths is in a way kind of an essence of the Buddha's teaching, and it is explained in the Dhammanupassana section of Satipatthana Sutta. And I think we can open up the session for question. Actually, otherwise I can cover some more information. If there are questions available, then we can first answer them. If time permits, I can further go through the document or the lesson or the teaching, or else we can answer the questions.
To ask a question, please raise your hand. You can find the raise hand button when you look at the list of participants, and then you should be able to click on that, and we'll take any questions in the order of raised hand. I don't currently see one, but I do have a question, Bhante. If you could please clarify the three fetters. So the personality view, we can just understand that as the view of there's a self, right? And then doubt, is that doubt of the Four Noble Truths specifically, or doubt for what? And then lastly, I've never quite really understood how this practice leads us to the last abandonment of the last fetter of adherence to rules and observances, and why this is important in the first stage of enlightenment.
Yeah. So basically, if I again, if I go to the document, so the three fetters are mentioned here: sakkaya ditti, vichikicca, silabbata paramasa. These are mostly familiar to you, personality view, Sakkaya Ditti. So typically we consider, just to explain in simple terms, this whole body as I. So when you tell, okay, I am sick, I have gone there, I have gone to Washington, I have gone to Melbourne. So likewise, if you are using terms, that basically refers to this body. So we consider this body as I. So on the other hand, suppose when you consider, okay, I am so and so. Okay, I am Jennifer. I am Venerable Chandrana. I am Venerable so and so. So we have a certain given name. So we are using it for easy communication. But we can actually recognize identity. We can identify with the given name. Assume that you have a degree, you have a PhD, you have a MSc, or you have another title, you are a doctor, you are an engineer, you are a lawyer. So according to that given title, you can recognize. And you are a mother, you are a father, you are a daughter. So accordingly, you can identify. And suppose you did certain important tasks. Okay, you are the one who invented something. You are the one who did a particular good thing or even a bad thing. Using that task, you can recognize, you can identify yourself. You can attribute a self to that task. And when you see something, you can say, okay, I saw it. When you hear something, you can tell, okay, I heard that. When you smell something, you can attribute person to it. When you taste something, similarly, when you think something, you can attribute a person to it. So you can see this whole experience is attached or coupled with the personality view, coupled with the I. So this is something one needs to penetrate. So typically, to each and every experience, we are attributing a self, I, person, and this is something we need to understand. So through the mindfulness practice, whenever you are looking at your own mind, you can see this I creation. You can see this mind creation. You can see this I making. You can see this mind making. In Dhamma, it is called Ahankara Mamankara or Ahinkara Maminkara. Where again and again, you are making an I. You are attributing an I. You are putting an I component to your experience. You are attaching an I component. You are attaching the mind component to the experience. And there, you consider this I, the body as I, various perceptions as I, various kinds of mental qualities as I, various feelings as I, or various sensual experiences as I. But more and more you observe this whole process, more and more you carefully analyze this process, carefully scrutinize this process, very mindfully, silently observe this process, you will understand this body cannot be considered as a one unit. It's a bunch of several types of processes. It's the breathing process, it has blood circulation, it has the digestion process. Likewise, there are so many processes are there and so many little components are there. So altogether, we attribute a person to it. We attribute a woman to it. We attribute a man to it. We attribute a child to it. So likewise, more and more one recognize this process, we will understand it is not a kind of a one unit, kind of a solid entity, but it's a kind of a process. Millions of processes are there. It's a kind of a accumulation or collection of various processes. So such understanding is quite important. So that helps us to penetrate the body. Similarly, suppose you are observing various perceptions, then you will understand attributing an I to perceptions is not a useful thing or not a wise thing. But rather, it's a, because of the ignorance, this I am attributing an I to it. Various perceptions come and go. They are very temporary and they are very transient. They are, I mean, simply sometimes mind-made. So attributing a person to it is not useful. Similarly, when there are various feelings available, when happy feelings are available, pleasurable feelings are available, painful feelings are available, when kind of neutral feelings are available, attributing a self to it, I to it, is not useful. That will be understood by seeing it, seeing them again and again. So then the feelings become a collection of feelings. It is not just a kind of I am suffering or I am happy. Rather, there are series of happy feelings, series of painful feelings, series of neutral feelings. All of them are very transient. They all come and go. They all arise and pass away. So more and more you recognize this, more and more you understand this reality, then attributing a person to it becomes impossible. Attributing a self to these processes becomes useless, because when the experience is extremely transient, very transitory, then how can you introduce a person to it? How can one say there is an ongoing, unchanging, immortal self? So that becomes impossible. So therefore, personality view mainly has a big connection with this solid view, kind of solidity. We are in kind of a compact view. We consider body as one unit, kind of a compactness is there. We consider all feelings as one unit, compactness is there. Various perceptions as one, compactness is there. Various types of feelings, various types of mental qualities, they all one can say as one. So that is also wrong. That is also solid view, compact view. And various sensual experiences. When we see, when we hear, when we taste, when we sense, when we think, attributing a person to it, attributing a self to it, and considering all these experiences as one unit is also wrong. So more and more this compact view is dissolved. Compact view is become more and more elaborated, the solidity becomes not available, compactness is not available, and it becomes kind of a flux, it becomes kind of an arising and passing away. So this personality view cannot exist in such a flux, in such a transient kind of processes. So such personality view, compactness, considering everything as one, becomes not possible. And doubt here is more doubt about the Buddha, his teaching, Dhamma, the noble Sangha, and the Patipada, the practice, say the Patijasamuppada, cause and effect relationship. More and more doubt becomes, actually doubt is on to that. So more you practice, such doubt going to be eradicated. And as I said in the previous section, if one is thinking in a wrong manner, so he may have various doubts related to the past. He may have various doubts related to the future. He may have various doubts related to the present. But those all 16 doubts, 16 views will be no more. So this vichikicca has a big relationship, strong relationship between this, what I have explained here, this 16 unwise attention contributing to different questions. All are actually doubts. All are kind of perplexities one may have because of wrong thinking. So these 16 kinds of doubts can no longer be available when you are free from vichikicca. And on the other hand, silabbata paramasa, when one doesn't know about the correct practice, when one is not confident about one's own practice, then he tries various techniques. He think, he presume, okay, by practicing this way he may be freed. by practicing another way, he may be freed. Say, for example, by practicing various ascetic practices, various observances, by going to a particular temple, by going to a particular teacher, by going to a one kind of a practice, going to another kind of a practice, going to a one kind of a religion, going to another kind of a religion. So we have various kind of adherences and observances because we don't know what is the correct path. So more one is confident on one's own practice, he understood some, he actually at the beginning, suppose he has some faith, and according to that faith he is now practicing. And as a result of his own practice, if he is now confident, okay, this practice is correct, I am leading towards the freedom, there is a, some kind of a freedom available in the mind, there is a, some kind of a reduction of defilements available in the mind. Now I am feeling some kind of a stillness, some kind of a clarity, more and more mindfulness is available in the mind. So now the practice is correct. So as a result, since he is now confident on one's own practice, he is no more interested about the other adherences, other various rituals, because he understood, I mean, it is not necessary. Because he is now quite confident on himself. He is quite confident on his own practice. He understands now the mind is growing. Now the mind is developing. Certain necessary skills are being developed. Now he is more and more confident in his own practice. Therefore, all the other rituals and adherences are not necessary. So as a result, so when one attains the stream entry, so he is abandoning all those unnecessary, unuseful, not useful adherences, rituals, because he is now confident and he is now clear about the path.
Thank you, Bhante. Another question I received, if we have time, is could Bhante please explain Bhava Tanha and Vibhava Tanha?
Yeah, actually Bhava Tanha and Vibhava Tanha comes under the cause of suffering. And Bhava Tanha, in practical sense, we can say one have a desire to become something. Desire to become something else. Say, for example, now you are doing some kind of a clerical job in your office. You are a clerk, say, for example. But you are sort of having some intention to go to a executive level. Now you are imagining, you are sort of wishing, you are sort of anticipating some kind of a promotion in your job. So now you have a Bhava Tanha, because you are at the moment in a way not happy about the clerical job or this clerk position, that is the, and you want to get rid of that and you want to become an executive. So now you have Bhava Tanha to become an executive and you want to get rid of the clerk, the clerical level. I am just giving a simple example. Say, for example, another example, you are eating something and it is not that tasty and it is little not delicious, so you want to get rid of it. Oh, you are thinking that there is something more delicious available. I want to have it. I want it. So how can I have it? I want to experience it. So this kind of a desire could be available, and desire to experience such more and more delicious food or whatever it is, and therefore desire to experience, we can say, is a Bhava Tanha. Actually, then this Bhava Tanha is leading towards Kama Tanha. Say, when you want to experience something good, it can be implemented either by experiencing through the eyes, through the ears, through the tongue, through the body, through the mind, so whatever it is. So basically, these three types of tanha three types of craving are very much interconnected. Whenever you want to become something different, more than what you are, then always you may be finding various means and methods. Maybe by satisfying your senses. Maybe by introducing a sort of title to your name. Maybe by getting a promotion. Maybe by getting an increment. So likewise, various kinds of desires are available. So all these can be explained using these three types of tanha.
Thank you, Bhante. One more question. You may have answered this, but I don't know, Bhante, if you'd like to elaborate more. The question is, so to eradicate I, is there any particular method that has been recommended?
Yeah, not only just one method. There are several methods are recommended. So in this sutta, Buddha given emphasis for Four Noble Truths. So there are several other methods mentioned. So actually, if I rush through this asavas, there are many different methods are explained in the various suttas in order to overcome asavas. You know, these influxes have great relationship with these fetters, and one way is to develop mindfulness, satipatthana practice. So if one practice for satipatthanas, so that will lead to the eradication of asavas, fetters. And another is to practice for spiritual powers, that is the, what you call pancha indriya. Saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, panya. So if one is developing those, then that also leads to eradication of fetters. Then five faculties, spiritual powers is pancha, chatura, this four iddipada. And pancha indriya is the faculties, and even if one develop anapanasati in 16 steps, so that also another method. And then the Four Noble Truths, as we have discussed today, and Noble Eightfold Path, that is also actually can be considered under Four Noble Truths. And then by seeing impermanence, whenever we are going through certain experience, if we are seeing all that experience through the eye of impermanence. So you are seeing the forms as impermanence, eye as impermanent, eye consciousness impermanent, eye contact impermanent, so various feelings as impermanent. So the practice of impermanence and the practice of non-self, all these are different techniques. In different suttas, Buddha has emphasized different techniques. I have actually summarized here, but this list is not end. I mean, these are not the only methods available. There are several other methods maybe also available. I have summarized here only kind of 8 methods, but there are of course many other methods also available.
Thank you, Bhante. Okay, looks like the person will ask next time. There are, I think, a couple more questions that I received, but maybe we can take them at the next session.
I mean, if I'm all right, if you all have time, I can spend some more few minutes.
Oh, okay, wonderful. Nirosha, would you like to ask your question?
Sure. This is Nirosha from Toronto.
Yeah.
Can you hear me properly? Bhante, you said the Vedanupasana is like when you look at the pain, but what I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, what I experienced was, and also you explained that question, the question Jennifer asked as well with the six senses. But when I try to do, my main kamatan is Iriyapata. Most of the time, that's what I do. When I try to come to the most precise, I cannot come 100% to the most precise present moment. Not 100%, but closer. So when I try to do like thin slices of time, what I feel is, it's the senses, like even the sight is a pain, right? The sight is, when I try to come to the precise present moment, everything starts like changing. Nothing can be hold on to at the present moment. And in that case, I feel like the whole thing is changing. It's not the sight only, but it's changing from six senses, as you said. And also, I feel like it's, in that case, the blood is not really circulating. The air, I'm not actually breathing in air. It's just a change of the air. It's just a change of the blood position, or it's a change of the moment. Is that part of the Vedanupassana as well? Is that how you described, or if I'm mistaken?
No, no, you are not mistaken, because you are quite correct. Actually, at the beginning, we couldn't come to that level of clarity. We couldn't come to that level of very subtle level of understanding. But at the beginning, we may start with some gross experiences, right? Understanding some gross pain, some gross pressure.
Right. Experience.
But more and more one go through it, you would be able to see the minute details. So that even, as you said, even hearing of sound can make a little irritation in the mind. Even going through of some kind of a sensation can make kind of a irritation. So in other terms, whatever arising and passing away actually leads to some kind of an irritation, some kind of a resistance, some kind of a unsatisfactoriness. So therefore, there's a beautiful statement in the teaching telling dukkameva upajjamano upajjati dukkameva nirujjati. So whatever is arising is actually dukkha. Whatever is nirujjati, whatever is passing away, is actually a dukkha. So therefore, this is a kind of a deeper understanding by seeing again and again when you are applying the mindfulness, and if you are able to recognize all the various sense experiences, all the various kinds of feelings, all the various kinds of mental thoughts.
Thoughts, yeah.
Even the thoughts. So more and more you understand it, you will understand, okay, everything, whatever impermanent, is leading to suffering. Sabbe sankhara dukkha. Yeah. So you just be patient and just understand how transient everything is. How such transient experience could give happiness. It is impossible when things are such a in a such kind of a flux, such kind of a transient nature. So you can't expect kind of a lasting happiness from that kind of a changing process. So expectation or that kind of a desire itself is wrong, is useless, because it is impossible to achieve a lasting happiness through that transient process, because it's always going to change.
You don't have to be in that fluctual state.
Letting go of that desire. So the letting go of that desire helps you to plunge into the nirodha, plunge into the sort of cessation of the suffering. So there you come across kind of a giving up, kind of a cessation, kind of a calming down, kind of a peace, stillness of the mind. Where you are now, your mind is no more paying attention to the arising and passing away. Rather, he is now has its own independence. It has its own freedom. It has its own clarity. So that is where the pardon, where, because mind understand whatever arising is passing away, and whatever arising and passing away leads to suffering. That is, therefore, freedom is not available in that path. You can't get a lasting happiness by going after such kind of a conditioned phenomena. So you have to advert the mind towards another direction where you come across, okay, there is kind of a peace where you can let go of all this arising and passing away phenomena.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you, Bhante. It clarified a lot of doubts that I had.
Well, thank you, Bhante. I think this will be the last question, actually. Should we be in Pariyanka posture for these four meditation processes, Kaya Nupassana, Vedana Nupassana, Chitta Nupassana, and Dhamma Nupassana?
Actually, only on the beginning. The beginning, say for example, if you are practicing Anapanasati, it's the best posture is to have the Pariyanka, have the sitting posture, keeping yourself upright and keeping your head straight and keeping your attention at the nostril. And that would be the best posture. But more and more you become confident in your practice, familiar with your practice, then you can take it to any posture. While walking you can practice, while standing you can practice, while lying down you can practice. So Kaya Anupassana, Vedana Anupassana, Chitta Anupassana, Dhamma Anupassana is all possible in all postures.
Thank you, Bhante. I think that is all for today's questions. And thank you for very much selecting this wonderful sutta that is so practical and relevant for our practice. So sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Okay, thank you very much for participation. So I would like to share merits with all the devas, deities, and all the beings. And we'll simply say the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahittika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahittika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahittika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu. Satang samagamu hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadhu sadhu sadhu
sadhu sadhu